This gentleman is probably the longest reigning continuous pro wrestling writer in the country. I know that from his bio, it indicates that his column in the Post and Courier has been running longer than anybody else's. You can find it, of course, at postandcourier.com, and we have a direct link to his columns here tonight at the FDHLounge.com. A real pleasure to have on somebody who has seen such a great chunk of pro wrestling history firsthand, continues to follow it on a regular basis. I speak, of course, of Mike Mooneyham of the Post and Courier. Tremendous pleasure to have you in the FDH Lounge tonight, Mike. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. It's my pleasure to be with you tonight, Rick.
It's great to have you. You always seem to be covering some of the most fascinating stories going on in the history of wrestling here, going back to the great Mid-Atlantic days on into the present here, and something that basically encompassed sort of past and present coming together. The legends of the past as they are today, this NWA Wrestling Legends Fan Fest down there in Charlotte, renowned for many things, because there were many different angles to it that were fascinating, but of course, especially to the hardcores, the first reunion of the original Four Horsemen, first time they'd been together since, I guess, 1987. So, of course, the thing that was funny to a lot of people going into this thing here, what's it going to be like with Ric Flair and Ole Anderson? If you've read their respective books, as I have, you have, and everybody else has, had to be some thoughts on that. So let's talk about that part of it. Here first and foremost, the Four Horsemen coming back together.
Yeah, that was really something. Greg Price put together a heck of an event this past year, and he's done so in the past few years. But this event was probably more noteworthy because of the Horsemen reunion, and that is for a lot of reasons, probably not the least of which was having Ric Flair and Ole Anderson actually sit at the same table together. Great strides have been made in the past to keep those two apart. They were both part of the Fan Fest last year, but actually never actually bumped into one another, which was a good thing. So I was a little hesitant to see what might happen this year with those two together after so many years. But as it turned out, everything went fine. No major incidents to report. And everything just went extremely smooth. The only hitch, and if you can consider it a hitch, was the lines were so long. Instead of signing autographs for a couple of hours and taking photos for an hour or so, those guys were signing and taking photos from noon until 7 or 7:30 that evening. It was just such a tremendous response.
I can imagine that, yeah, just because, again, we all have such great memories of what it was like at that moment in time. There's a question that our producer, who was able to get you booked tonight, Steve Servillo, he posed a question to me to have posed to you. I find it to be a good one here in terms of when you look at the politics of the wrestling business, incarnations of the Four Horsemen that maybe could have been but weren't. Everybody knows, again, you know, in 1993, Tully Blanchard was rumored to be coming back. It ends up being Paul Roma instead. We all know how that ended up going. But are there any other things along the way here of somebody who was rumored to be joining and then didn't because they either left the promotion, another plan got devised for them internally, or something like that? Any big near misses you're aware of?
No, not that I'm aware of. Certainly it was an elite group, but they were pretty careful about who they wanted to be a part of the group, with the exception of Paul Roma, who really, I don't think any of the guys at that time wanted him in the group. It was a decision made over their heads, and it was a last-minute decision because Tully got pulled back at the last moment. But, you know, I think everyone would have wanted to be a Horseman, but everyone couldn't be a Horseman.
Well, that makes sense. Well, the other one that comes to mind as far as sticking out like the proverbial cold sore on the debutante, at least from a work rate perspective, would be Mongo. When you look at Steve McMichael in the late 90s, was that a thing where the wrestlers, knowing the star power and knowing the reflected glory of a Super Bowl champion, media figure, whatever, were okay with it in that sense? I mean, I've never heard them disparage him the way that they disparage Paul Roma.
No, actually, they all, especially Rick, like Mongo.
Uh-huh.
He might have not, in the ring, he might have not wrestled like a horseman, but outside the ring, he certainly lived like a horseman.
Hey, that was half the battle right there, is to be able to fit in on that level.
Yeah.
But this, the NWA Legends Fan Fest, again, it focused on, of course, the Four Horsemen part of this as well, but there were a lot of other great legends there, and it seemed to be a roster I saw, from what I saw anyways, that seemed to focus on a lot of the big names from Crockett in the 80s, correct?
Yeah, it did. But, you know, there were a lot of other guys there as well, like Danny Hodge, for instance. Danny had been all over the country, but he never worked in the Carolinas. And he had a great time in Charlotte. He told me that he wished he had been able to work for Jim Crockett Promotions back in the day. It just never worked out that way. But, yeah, most of the guys were legends who worked the Carolinas and Virginia back in the Jim Crockett Promotion days. And I've got to tell you, I've never seen so many, so many old stars under one roof. It was incredible. You talk about names like the Horseman, Harley Race, and some of the guys who, you know, had been sort of off the radar for years, like Mark Lewin.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has tracked him down in years, and Lewin was there. Totally unrecognizable unless you knew it was him. Just a tremendous array of talent. The Fargos, Donnie and Jackie Fargo together for the first time in more than 25 years. That was a real treat. Just so many great stars, and bringing back so many wonderful memories. What an event!
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, I mean it sounds like that would just trigger memories just every time you turn around and you see somebody else like that. And again, and you've been covering pro wrestling with the Post and Courier since 1979, so you've seen a lot of the great days of wrestling. I myself, you know, missed the Mid-Atlantic days before the Georgia Championship merger. So I've resolved one day to catch up on that on DVD with some of the sets that are out there, because I understand how many great things I missed late 70s, early 80s. But I know that from your time on that circuit, you've had an enduring friendship with Ric Flair, among many others. But you're certainly well known as somebody who is one of Ric Flair's legions of friends out there. I'm wondering what crosses your mind. I heard him referenced a couple weeks ago on Monday Night Raw. The line that Triple H had about why he wasn't going to put Evolution back together, and it was kind of a throwaway, but it was Batista's always hurt, and Ric Flair is probably off signing autographs in a VFW hall somewhere, or whatever it was that he said. It seemed gratuitous, and for a man who bills himself as Ric Flair's best friend, it sounded pretty jarring.
Well, I got to tell you, Rick, it was very curious that he said that. You know, they had planned on Ric coming back at one point and maybe becoming general manager of SmackDown, and Ric decided, not to go that route. And I even asked Rick about it. I'd asked him, I said, did you hear Hunter the other night on TV making that statement? And he said, yeah. And I said, why? You know, that was sort of out of the blue. Why would he say something like that? He said, Mike, I really don't know, you know. Hmm. It didn't appear he was actually worried about it, but it was sort of, it sounded like a jab at Rick almost.
Yeah, that's how I took it, sort of the McMahon family expressing a little passive aggressiveness towards
maybe
that was, I think, how a lot of us
through his son-in-law.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he might be Ric Flair's best friend, or as he bills himself as that, anyways. But yeah, he's still the boss's son-in-law, and you know that's an interesting set of dual roles there. Want to ask you about some other things happening here too,
sure.
Because certainly with your role with the Post and Courier, I mean you've covered a good part of wrestling's past, but you're continuing to stay on top of things as they evolve. So with the current scene here, I'd like to ask you about SummerSlam. I actually didn't make it a point to see that. I only really make it a point to catch things these days that really grab me. Obviously WrestleMania would be that. The other ones here and there that I know it's going to be fun to go watch at the sports bar.
Yeah.
SummerSlam, to me, it didn't have the feel of the second biggest pay-per-view of the year, the WrestleMania of the summer, as some people sort of hyperbolically put it. What were your thoughts on the event, and if it lived up to the billing that the event earned in the late 80s and early 90s?
No, it didn't. Something is missing, and really, you know, it's what I've said all along. It's star power. There were a couple of very good matches on the show, one great match, but there just seemed to be something missing. And I think, you know, we've seen a lot of these, a lot of our big names of the past retire or are not working for WWE right now. And I really think it's a lack of established star power. I mean, if you watch Raw every week, you're basically seeing a few names on top each and every week. You know, there's Triple H, there's John Cena, there's Randy Orton, but there's really not too much of a mix. And Shawn Michaels is back. But SummerSlam, to me, was a good show, but certainly not a great show, certainly not up to the level of SummerSlams of the past. And I say that even though I considered the Jeff Hardy CM Punk match just a spectacular bout, but and the Undertaker making his return, but there it just didn't seem to have the pizzazz that some previous SummerSlams have, and I think that's the general nature of the business right now. It's lacking a couple of big names, new names to come on the scene and really take charge.
Well, and you mentioned one of the ones who is breaking through, having a 2009 that's putting him on that tier thus far, of course, being CM Punk. What was interesting, last week on the station here, I had what would probably be a good smart mark versus mark debate, I guess you could say, myself and Buck Woodward. He took, I think, the mark perspective on The Undertaker coming back. Oh, it's great for business, blah, blah, blah. I said, you know what? I don't think we know this, because what's CM Punk going to look like at the end of this feud? His first match out with The Undertaker is a submission match. Nobody makes The Undertaker tap.
Nope.
Am I right to be concerned, Mike, for how CM Punk is going to come out of this thing at the end? Jeff Hardy's helped to make this guy as a main eventer. I'm very concerned about what happens in this next feud. I think it could be make or break for him.
You're exactly right. CM is a smaller guy, let's face it. Vince has been reluctant to push some of these guys, and it's going to be very important how CM Punk stacks up against The Undertaker. You're right, it could be make or break. If it's a match where CM Punk loses in a convincing fashion, you know, he's on the way back down. But CM Punk is on the verge right now of becoming a major superstar. To go all the way, to go to that next level, it's going to take a star the caliber of someone like The Undertaker to make that happen. And I'm kind of skeptical, I hate to say, but I'm kind of skeptical about this.
I feel the same way. I join you in the skepticism. I pray that we are both wrong because, again, CM Punk is one of the potential redemptive lights for this company if he can come through. And, again, I hate to be the smart mark cynic here, but I'm going to read you off what was my reaction on our FDH Lounge Twitter page when I got the news SummerSlam night of Bryan Danielson signing. And this was maybe a little over the top as far as how I felt, but here's what I put. Bryan Danielson signs with Titan. Oh, this will end well. Skits with Gold Dust. Squashed by Swagger. Announcers encouraging boring chants. Okay, so that's a little over the top, Mike, but I mean, you have to still be concerned, do you not, in terms of this guy, because he's kind of a fragile egg coming into the company. If CM Punk is small, but he's smaller, I mean, this guy's got to be handled the right way, and the company's not notorious for getting out of their way to get behind newcomers of his size.
Nope. Bryan Danielson is small. He wasn't created by WWE. They have treated people like him in the past not so well coming in. And, you know, I think this is an opportunity for WWE. I was excited to hear about Danielson signing, you know, I think he could be another. He has the potential, certainly, to be a superstar in the ring for this company. But if they bring him in and treat him someone like Brian Kendrick or Paul London or, you know, one of the other guys who's made great waves outside of WWE and have great ability, if they bring him in on that level as a glorified cruiserweight, then you can forget about it. He's wasting his time. I hope they've looked, you know, they've looked at the past, and I hope they realize that they really, more than ever now, need to be building major stars to headline future pay-per-views, because even the guys in there now, Undertaker, Hunter, you know, they're getting older. Shawn Michaels, he's doing a wonderful job, but how much time can he left? Can he have left in the company working at his level? You know, they're going to have to be guys to come in and fill in those roles, and Bryan Danielson has all the credentials. Let's hope they push him.
He certainly does. No question about that. Somebody who's one of the established stars, but just boom, out of nowhere, is on the outs with the company, perhaps strongly so based on the way that he reacted to the suspension. Good old Ray Ray himself, Ray Mysterio, with the positive drug test. I see TJ on the other side of the glass, not a Ray Ray fan. And he was in the house last night, I guess, for the match where he got turfed out of the company for 30 days here. But as I understand, Ray Ray got in a lot of offense last night. It wasn't a complete squash. We'll see what it looks like on TV Friday night, but where do you think they're going from here? This is a guy who is strong in terms of helping to build the Hispanic market, strong in terms of helping with the PG direction of the company, with the kiddies and the merchandise and the masks and all of that. A cornerstone guy, albeit quietly, you know, more quietly, say, than a Cena or a Triple H, DX, somebody who's an Undertaker, but important nonetheless. What do you think's going to happen with him now?
Yeah, he's extremely important, especially, you know, with their plans to expand the product, to go into Mexico. You know, you have to keep Ray. He is your shining star with that audience right now. And I know Ray has been, there have been some major disagreements over the past year. I don't think he's extremely happy with the way things are turning out. And he thinks he was unjustly suspended. So that's not a recipe for a very good relationship coming up in 30 days when he returns. I think it's gonna. I think they have to treat this one very delicately as well. Ray holds the key to a lot of things right now. No, he's not. You know, he's not in the caliber of Triple H and John Cena as far as his standing in the company, but he's extremely, extremely popular with kids who they supposedly are trying to gain a bigger percentage of their audience with right now, and he's key to the Hispanic audience, so it's going to be real interesting to see how this plays out. Ray is 34 years old, and, you know, has had five or six major knee operations, so you know, who knows how much longer he's going to be able to perform at this level. But the next 2 years are very important. They better really stay on very good terms with him.
Well, yeah, I think he is very critical to everything that is going to be continuing to happen with the company. Coming off of the United States title run that he's been on and at least quasi-main event status of the last couple of years, yeah, I mean, when he comes back, it'll be interesting to see if they keep him at the same level or if it just becomes his job to elevate other guys. I could see it possibly going that way.
Absolutely, and I know Vince is very upset that he made comments to that Mexican publication. Vince doesn't like his guys going on, you know, going public with their disenchantment with the company, and he was very vocal. And I don't know if he's going to receive further punishment beside the 30-day suspension, but I know Vince was pretty hot about it. And you know, I heard it was a tremendous match with John Morrison last night in Cleveland. I heard they had a heck of a match.
I'm looking forward to seeing that on TV and seeing how that plays out. And, of course, Mike, there's no question that people are looking for your stuff on a regular basis. The postandcourier.com website, mikemooneyham.com. I know your book is still available at Amazon, many other places as well. Sex Lies and Headlocks that you co-wrote from a few years ago. I read that book, and it was just an awesome read from a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff. We always like to give our guests a chance to plug. So anything that I neglected to mention thus far, Mike, please do so.
You did a fine job.
I hit everything, huh? Okay. All right.
Well, not everything, but enough to enough to put me over very well, Rick. Thank you.
Well, I couldn't help but do so, Mike, because you've had a tremendous career in the business. Your website, The Wrestling Gospel According to Mike Mooneyham, people can check that out at mikemooneyham.com. A tremendous career, much more to come from you, sir. It was a pleasure to have you on the show, everything I thought it would be, and we'd love to do it again sometime.
Well, thanks very much, Rick. It was my pleasure completely.
Oh, thank you so much. Mike Mooneyham, everyone, legendary pro wrestling writer, and a pleasure to have him on the FDH Lounge here tonight.